Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy connecting the light. I feel very privileged today to have as my guest Swami Kriyananda, and I'm going to take a little time to introduce him because at the age of 84 years, and he hasn't finished working yet, he's achieved so much, I think it's worth knowing. And he tells us that for more than 60 years, he's continued to teach the wisdom of Yogananda. He is noted as a prolific and internationally regarded author, speaker, accomplished composer, playwright and artist, in addition to being a world-renowned spiritual teacher. And he has authored more than 140 books and composed 400 pieces of music. Known as one of the world's foremost authorities on living wisely and well. And his most recent book, which we are obviously going to talk about, The New Path, My Life with Paramahansa Yogananda, was the winner of the 2010 USA Book News Award, that's in the spiritual book category, and the Eric Hoffer 2010 Book Award in the spiritual self-help category. And Kriyananda's books and audios have sold more than 3.5 million copies worldwide and have been translated into 28 languages. And he has given thousands of lectures in five languages on four continents. And for 3 years, he had an All India Daily Television program, which reached into some 20 million homes. And at one time, he had radio programs in San Francisco and in Sacramento. And I'll finally add that Kriyananda is the founder of Ananda Worldwide, which encompasses eight spiritual communities throughout the US, Europe, and India that have more than 1,000 residents. Well, that's quite an achievement. And as I've said, he's still going strong. So welcome to the program, Swami.
Thank you very much. And when you give that litany, I think, my God, have I done all that? But I guess at least it kept me off the streets.
Right. Now, the opening question I would like to ask you is, did you always know that you were destined to become a very high spiritual teacher?
You know, it's on, because actually in college, I remember saying to my roommate, suddenly, just out of the blue, I said, I'm going to be a spiritual teacher. And he looked at me and he laughed, and I was serious. I knew that I would be, but I don't know how I knew. I suppose when you speak of having been a Protestant yourself, I was also in the Church of England, and I didn't have anything in common with it. But when I met Yogananda, I said, this is it.
Mm. Yes, I can relate to that in my own way. I also found myself in a similar situation. And when you talk of saying you know at the time that this is it, it's so positive and certain. Now, just looking back, what do you consider to be your greatest achievement?
You know, I don't think I've achieved anything, truthfully. I don't mean that jokingly. I mean that the reason I've been able to do my little bit in this world, as much as it's been, has been that I've let God do it through me. I don't feel that I've done it. And so I find that when, for example, I've written music, I said, well, I want a music that says this, this, and this. Give me a melody, it's there immediately. And when I write a book, I just sort of ask him to write it, and a 600-page book comes out in two months. I myself sort of shake my hand in wonder, but I didn't do it. He did it.
Mind you, I think you still have to be a pretty advanced soul to take on that work on Earth, so I think you can take some credit for it.
You know, that's just the wrong take that you got around. I'm sorry. But really, the whole purpose of the spiritual path is to get rid of this ego and to realize that God has dreamed this entire universe. And we are just his instruments. If we can get this ego out of the way, not, I don't mean pride. I mean, that little sense that tells you, I am doing this, I am doing that. If we can get that out of the way, we can accomplish great things, because he does it through us. But the reality is that he does do it. So there's no room for pride once you understand the truth. People often talk about my being humble. I'm not humble, I'm truthful. This is the way things really are.
Yes, that's great, and I can certainly go along with what you said there. Now, you've spoken about bringing yoga out, meditation, the wisdom of the East to the Western world, and you would pass along the knowledge of the ancients. Now, how far back does that knowledge go, and where did it actually come from?
You know, as long as mankind has been on this world, I believe that this is a personal belief. I don't know that there's any teaching fully to justify it. But I think man was born at a very high age. And at that time, these things were known, then they were lost. Actually, it's a very interesting thing, and something that your listeners might enjoy thinking about. In fact, one of my students here has put out a book called The Yugas, which means the ages. And it makes a very good case for something they teach in India, that the whole world goes through a cycle of ages, from dark to advanced to dark again, taking 12,000 years to rise, 12,000 years to descend. And that has been going on for a very long time. Yogananda said that mankind has been on this planet for about 53 million years. And in all that time, there have been many great civilizations, Atlantis, Egypt, others. And they have risen, they have fallen. Now we're on a rising trend in this country, in this world, in this age. And mankind is heading toward greater and greater knowledge. Right now we are in an age of energy. And we will find that people don't rely so much on land for wealth as they used to. Earls and dukes and so on will be a thing of the past. The important thing is that you can do anything you want to in your own basement. If you have a computer there, you can become wealthy from that little office. It's a different age altogether. And the next age will be a mental age, where in the first of these people conquer the illusion of space, and they'll be able to travel to other planets. Interestingly, because it poses the question, will they even understand that the farthest galaxy is as close to them as their own hand? It really is, because it's all a dream of God's. Yes. And then in the age of Treta, or the mental age, they discover that time is an illusion. And when I was in India, I found two different readings that came down from about that age, in that age, in fact, 5,000 years ago, talked about me as an individual. And many people have gone to these things and found readings for them, showing that India was not a country of cowards at that time. It was very highly advanced. If they didn't have huge skyscrapers, it's because they didn't want such things.
And then we lost a link there.
It will be an age of enlightenment.
Right. Okay. That was a relief. I thought we'd lost you there for a minute, Swami. There was a little break. Yes, you're talking about cycles there, and that appears to me to be the whole way the universe functions. So I'm not surprised to hear you talk about cycles that affect us as souls on the earth. You mentioned Atlantis and Lemuria. Do you feel that a lot of our spiritual knowledge has come from that far back?
Oh, long, long before that.
Yes.
That's fairly recent compared to the time man has been. Archaeologists and all the scientists, they just don't have it right. They're going to have to change their whole view on the antiquity of man, on the greatness of ancient man, and many things even now indicate that man knew much more before than he seems to have known now. They use this word and they love it. Hunters and gatherers. I begin almost to shudder when I see that expression again. What is a hunter and a gatherer? They were human beings. They had societies. And they lived in society. And they were very, very wise. So the knowledge of yoga came down from very ancient times because it's based on the way man himself is made. And if men have the wisdom to understand, then they begin quickly to understand that when they have feeling, it's centered in the heart. No young swain who has his heart broken by a broken romance will ever say, "I have a broken knee." He'll always say, "I have a broken heart," because that is, in fact, where feeling comes from. When you concentrate deeply, or when you look at pictures of saints, they're all looking upward. Well, the way saints look upward, you'd think the skies were full of angels and so on. But that's not the case. You look upward because your eyes are drawn upward when your mind is focused in the frontal lobe of the brain between the eyebrows. And when you feel any enjoyment that you have in the world, you see a beautiful sunset. It isn't the sunset you're really enjoying. It's your inner joy with which you respond to that sunset. And that's in the spine. So these are universal truths. And when you bring them down to that level, all men can understand it. Yoga is not a unique science. It's the natural science of human upliftment.
Right. There may be listeners who aren't too familiar with what the principle of yoga is. Would you like to briefly explain what it entails?
Well, yoga means union. And first of all, it means union with yourself, to be completely self-integrated. You can't integrate yourself with God until you become completely truthful, honest, and have whole integrity. For a businessman, it means never cheating his customers, trying to think of them as people he can serve and help, and so on. I won't go into that long thing. But the reason that people are falling into a depression right now is because they have gotten away from that truth, and they don't have integrity. Governments lie to you, businesses lie to you, everybody lies to you, and they'll have to learn that lesson. But once you've got that self-integrated, then you have to realize that the true integration, the true union that we are all seeking, is union with God. Well, if you think of God as a wise old man or vindictive old man or whatever you want to talk about, you're very much limiting him. In ancient India, Shankaracharya explained that God is ever-existing, ever-conscious, ever-new bliss. And this is what everybody in the world is seeking. Everybody wants happiness. And that happiness is only doing service for bliss. Once we find bliss, we know we have everything we want. We're all seeking that bliss and don't know it. But it's really a wonderful thing to realize that everybody is seeking that same truth. Makes it just impossible not to love everybody. You know that they are your brothers and sisters because all of them want the same thing you are seeking. But to unite your soul with bliss means to reach that point of absolute fulfillment where for all eternity you live in bliss. Now, everything in this world, if you had just one thing, you'd get bored to death. And that's why when Yogananda added, and it was he who added that little phrase to this sentence, ever new bliss. It's always new. It's always fresh. It's always thrilling. And each person manifests that bliss in a different way, and each person is unique. It's a thrilling truth. But that's what yoga is really all about.
Right, that's a very long and detailed explanation. Thank you very much. Would it be true to say when we talk of God that everything that is exists within that energy that we call God?
Everything is, say that again.
Is it correct to say that everything that exists is within that energy that we call God?
Well, God is behind energy. Mm-hmm. We may call energy God. Hottentot might call a crocodile God. But gradually you refine it to the point where energy becomes a manifestation of consciousness, of thoughts. And when you go beyond those thoughts, you realize that those thoughts are all manifestations, not of energy. That's the word we use now in this particular yuga or age, but it's really bliss.
Mm, right, thank you for that.
Everything now, is conscious.
Right, yes. Yes, what one has to say, even to the rock or something that you could view as being dead, if you like, still has a level of consciousness.
Yes. And even the rocks have consciousness. They're products of consciousness, but I could not sit down to a game of chess with a rock. It's on a lower level of manifestation, but it is a part of the infinite dream. You yourself can dream of a rock, but you know you can't talk to it.
Well, I suppose you could, but you might not get an answer.
Maybe, maybe.
Oh, that was a good one. Now, you're spoken of in connection with being able to guide people so that they can influence the outer world through their inner self. And you talk of how to overcome difficulties and attract what you truly want in life. Now, can you briefly explain how we would attract what we really want in life?
How we...
Attract.
Everything is based on consciousness. When we bring consciousness down to the level of energy, there's the law of magnetism that comes in. As electricity through a wire generates a magnetic field. So, on a much subtler level, every thought you send out with willpower is a kind of magnet that draws to you. And that's why it's important not to have negative attitudes like problem consciousness. Have solution consciousness, and you'll have the answer. Have a feeling of love for everybody, you'll attract friends everywhere. If you have the opposite, you'll attract enemies. Sometimes people are drawn into a single family who were enemies before, and they're put in that position so they can fight it out at close quarters. But... you see, some families are never at peace. But you attract people, you attract money, you attract opportunities, you attract everything through the law of magnetism.
Right. So is it absolutely correct to say that like attracts like?
Absolutely. And here, okay, my guru, he was from India, Paramahansa Yogananda. He was in America. I was born in Romania. And somehow we got to meet. There was a magnetism there. We'd been together before. And so I was attracted to Los Angeles. And I met him at the age of 22. But that attraction will act space just doesn't exist. Wherever your heart calls you, you will be drawn in time. And this is true for our friends. Many of the people that you met, whom you're fond of, are people that you've known many times before.
Yes, I think that explains why when we meet some people for the first time, we do feel as though we already know them.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I was in a TV station in India recently, not very recently, 2 or 3 years ago, but at 85, I can call that recent. And everybody in that room, it was as if they were old friends or old family members. It was very strange.
Yes, and also very pleasant, of course, to feel at home right away with people that you, on paper, you don't actually know.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, I'd like you to talk for a while about your community classes. I've read through your papers on it, and they sound as though they're wonderful setups. Talk about the aims of the classes, perhaps.
The
aims of the classes. You must be referring to the ones
you just gave. Oh, you're talking about the classes I gave in Los Angeles.
Yes, exactly.
Okay,
yes.
They were about how to find success and happiness in life. I mentioned this earlier, and you surely have experienced it in England, but this world is heading for a very serious depression economically. And it's going to be good for us in the end, but painful for what it lasts. And I gave those classes to help people to understand that even in the worst of times, they can be peaceful and untouched by all the madness around them if they have the right attitudes and do the right things. So that was the point of those classes.
Right. Now, one of the teachings, I gather, is to help people improve their health, mental clarity and vitality. Now, what, in general terms, can people do to improve their health?
Our health. Mm. Well, if we eat rightly, you know, personally, I think that it's a very good thing to be a vegetarian. I don't want to impose that on people because I think that diet is secondary. But it's not just a question of the killing of animals. You kill vegetables to eat them, too. But the higher animals, especially cows and pigs, they're very intelligent. And they have a lot of pain and fear. And when you eat that meat, you take on their pain and their fear. There's something else in that besides that. Yogananda said that he went into the slaughterhouses to see. He saw them scooping cancers out of beef. And he said the reason ham is sweet is because of all the pus in it. So these are not very pleasant thoughts. But if you want to be healthy, you certainly will find that it pays to eat right. There are many other things about eating right, and they're all very important to learn. Health foods are a good thing. Of course, I don't recommend that you be a fanatic, but balanced living is a good thing. Then, of course, exercise. Yogananda developed a series of exercises called energization exercises, and they are wonderful to do every day, and different deep breathing exercises. Actually, the influence on the mind, on the body of the mind, is beginning to be understood, even in medical circles. I remember I was in Mexico when I was 19 years old, and I didn't have much money there, and I went to the hospital with dysentery and streptococcus and tonsillitis, and I was not in very good shape. And the doctor said, you might as well resign yourself to having to be here for 2 weeks. And I made a little discreet inquiry and found that I didn't have the money to be there for 2 weeks. So I said, I've got to get out of here. In 2 days, I was out of there. So willpower, positive thinking, all these things are very important. If you understand that depression can lead to ill health, if you understand that anger can lead to ill health, if you understand that every negative attitude can very much harm your health, then surely you'll have at least one incentive to be kinder and more relaxed and not get all stressful and so on. Seek happiness. Understand that money is not an end in itself. Happiness is the goal. So if that's the truth, why not be happy now?
Yes, indeed. You're talking of happiness. I noticed that in your class, The Art of Happiness, you talk about being happy in any situation. So that probably relates to what you've just said. But have you any additional advice, as I say, to be happy in any situation?
You know, I have been, as everybody is, I have had to go through periods of great darkness and sorrow. Being put in positions not by my own willpower, but by the will of others, of people who tried to destroy me. And I found that clinging to God was the most important thing of all. When I came out of those clouds, in every single case, I found that, in fact, it was the best thing for me. It was what I needed in order to serve God better, in order to do what I really wanted to do, which is to come closer to Him.
So, to be happy in any situation, even where you're perhaps feel that you're being victimized or being assaulted or harmed in some way, you're saying, are you literally sort of turn to God and have faith in God that you'll get through?
Absolutely. And always it's better to blame yourself. I mean, why waste your energy being bitter? How others are, it's their problem, it's not yours. Their opinion of you is their business, not yours. And so don't worry about it. And just figure, I am happy in myself, and I don't need their opinion, one way or the other, to be happy. I will just be happy.
Right, very good advice indeed. Now, in this particular age and at this time, I think it would be true to say that a lot of people are experiencing stress. And again, one of your classes was talking about breaking the cycle of stress. What would you say to people that don't seem to be able to get themselves out of a stressful condition?
I'd say, sit up straight, take a deep breath, take a few more deep breaths, and try to read something happy.
a simple solution, indeed.
It's of course more complex than that. But the fact is, when you give out energy, then you receive energy. So if you give out kindness, you'll find that people will be kind to you. You know, one time many years ago, I was wanting to go to France. My parents were living in France at the time, and they invited me over. And I was in the line before the check-in counter, and the man in front of me was, they were telling him he had too much luggage, and he had to pay for it. He got all angry. He called the manager over. The more he got angry, the more adamant those check-in people were. And finally, he swore he'd never fly Pan Am again and so on. And I had a lot more weight than he did. And I was a little worried. I didn't have any money. And I went up to the counter, and I thought, well, God is in the form of this check-in agent. And I smiled at him. And he looked at me and he said, oh, let's see what we got here. All right, passed it right through. Not a problem. What we put out makes a big difference to how people will treat us and how life will treat us. So be kind, be loving, be forgiving, be positive. You'll find that life is not making you a victim. You're making yourself a victim, and then life reacts accordingly.
That's certainly very good advice. Now, I must come back to breaking the cycle of stress, because you do mention in your classes about overcoming it with breathing and relaxation techniques. Could you give us any idea of how one would approach that?
Who would approach it?
Well, someone with stress, how would they approach the idea of getting into relaxation to overcome it?
It would be very good if he would practice meditation every day. It will give him a sort of center to which he can withdraw. And I'd say that just as we practice physical hygiene by brushing our teeth every day, so we ought to practice a little mental hygiene by being kind to people, and spiritual hygiene by just at least a little bit of meditation every day. Remember that behind everything, there is always God in your life.
Right. I mean, I notice that those methods are credited with quite some powerful changes within people, to the extent that they reduce blood pressure, can manage chronic pain, reverse advanced heart disease, and so forth. So meditation, undoubtedly, if one knows how to use it, can be very successful indeed.
Yes, it is.
Right. I'm still looking at some of the information on your community classes. So where does sort of diet fit in? I guess that's to do with the health aspect. But when you mentioned diet, did you mean that people should go on a diet, or was it just the choice of foods?
Selection of foods is the main thing. You know, I've never been very hot on diets myself. I think probably in some past life I starved to death. Because
you're making up for it. Yeah.
I've never been very good at fasting. But nonetheless, I think if my regular diet is good, it's a good thing to fast one day a week. This is a good practice. It's not one I've ever followed. And so I have to say that publicly. I don't want people to think that I'm living everything that I teach. I don't do that. But it's a good thing anyway.
Right. Now, Ananda Worldwide, that's a wonderful achievement. You talk about finding a deeper connection with God. What did you mean by that?
Well, when you have that bliss in your heart, you know what God is. He's not an old man, and he's not separate from you. You can't say, I am God, but you have to say, God is I. The wave cannot say, I am the ocean. The ocean certainly can say, I am all the waves. And so each wave can say, God is who I really am inside my little wave-like reality.
Right. Now,
in other words, your true nature is bliss.
Right, yes, very nice. Now, again, going back to Ananda Worldwide, you're talking of the teaching of Ananda, which encompasses the essential truth of both of the Western and Eastern spiritual disciplines. And you talk of the mystic teachings of Christ. Now, what were those?
The teachings of Christ were love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love thy neighbor as thyself. His other greatest teaching was, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these things will be added unto you. And both these are the essential truths of the Christian teaching.
Right. Again, that's very simple, and yet a very powerful comment, isn't it?
Very powerful.
Yeah. What about the divine loving presence? Is that another description for God?
Yes, it's a fine one. But I would say love, divine love, is bliss in action.
Right. Now, you have... Let me see. Well, I'm looking for my notes here. Yes, you talk about your communities providing a sanctuary from stressful living. And I guess lots of people would love to find a place like that. But again, I'm coming back to people with stress, I suppose. If they can't get to your communities, what is the essential things that they can do to help themselves?
Well, you know, it would be good. England is not that far from Italy. If you could go to Italy, we have a retreat there. It's near Assisi, where St. Francis lived. And many people come from all over Europe, many from England. And we have classes in English as well as in Italian. And they can learn how to meditate. They can learn that there really are people in this world who are happy and peaceful and loving toward one another, who support each other instead of trying to compete with each other. And this is a teaching which, if we can take to heart, can change our whole lives If you look on other people as your collaborators, your friends, not your competitors, then you will find that you are happier.
Right, yes. I can completely believe that. That's very nice. Now, you have spoken of spiritual teachings of the highest Indian tradition of self-realization. What is lacking in people without self-realization? I mean, would they be able to identify that lack within themselves?
I think people come on many, many different levels. I mean, there are some people who you couldn't reach them with a bomb. And there are other people who are just hungering for it. And I, when I came onto this passage at the age of 22, I thought it makes such perfect sense. Nobody in the world could resist this truth. So I tried talking to my parents and my friends and brothers and sisters, brothers and cousins, and I found it just sailed right over their heads. They thought I was crazy. You have to be ready. And talking won't do it. Logic won't do it. I think probably what I would have done much better doing was helping them to feel my love and not just be reasoned at all the time. So I think if we're going to do really good in this world, the most important thing we can do is radiate outward from our being this divine love and joy.
Mm. And if everybody was able to do that, we would be living in heaven, I think.
Yes, I do think so.
Right. Now, you've had many awards over a long period of time. It's quite a long list. But one that I was curious about was the Julius Caesar Medal in Rome, which you were awarded in 2007. And having seen recently the history of Julius Caesar, I felt in some way that seemed strange that you would be associated with that person. But in what way did they, say, honour Julius Caesar to award you a medal?
God knows, it just seems to be their thing. They call it the Julius Caesar Award. And I'd even forgotten that I received it. I've had about 16 awards, and I don't really remember any of them very well. But, you know, it's curious in a way. Some psychic told me many years ago that I was a general under Julius Caesar myself, and that I was always trying to find a way to win without having to go to battle and kill people. But that's the only contact I have with him that I can even guess at. You know, I'll just mention this, though, that my guru said that, I'm not sure, no, wait a minute. He said Alexander was Adolf Hitler. And that was very interesting.
Really?
And now Julius Caesar, maybe. Oh yes, he was the Emperor Alexander, Emperor whatever it was, in Germany. What was his name? Kaiser Wilhelm, or I don't remember now. Anyway, he was that man.
Right.
Still a warrior, and he said Stalin was Genghis Khan. They just keep coming back.
Yes, and it's interesting from what you've said there that we... He said
that Churchill was Napoleon.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Well, it's strange that they seem to follow in the same traditions, isn't it?
Happened, very, very interesting.
Yeah, and that happened with yourself. Now, looking for my next question here. Got so interested in what you were talking about there, I've missed my point here. Oh, yes. I noticed on your website you talk about some classes that are coming up. You refer to something that's happening in the spring. And as we're getting very quickly near to the end of the program, I wondered whether there was anything that you wanted to tell our listeners about.
No, I don't know anything about it. As far as I know, I'm not giving any bloody crap room.
All right.
I'm going to be quiet here and writing a book. But I do go to classroom in Los Angeles.
Right. Do you mean that you've semi-retired already?
Not really, no. I have lots of other things to do, but I don't have classes in mind. I have a couple of movies I'm working on, and people are going to come up and film me in April. And there's another one, The Life of Yogananda, that I'll have to go back to Los Angeles to work on also. And so I'm still being kept somewhat busy.
Do you still offer classes online?
You know, I don't. Ananda does, okay. My friends are in the room here, and they tell me that we have classes online here.
Oh, right, okay.
I'm sort of antediluvian, and I don't really know what goes on the Internet.
Right. Now, we haven't specifically spoken about your book. Is there anything you would like to say about it?
Oh, it's really, I think it's a good book. I do think it merited those prizes. It's about my search for truth as a child. That's what I wanted from the beginning. But it leads me to Paramahansa Yogananda. And then it tells about what it was like to live with Paramahansa Yogananda, what it was like to be taught by him. And I spent the last 3.5 years of his life with him. It was the high point of my life, really. So that book is important for the reason that nobody else has written anything like it.
Right. So you're still teaching the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. So you obviously...
Handed me something here. Many of my classes are online through www.ananda.org.
All right, okay. Ananda.org. Fine. Okay.
Yeah.
I would think our listeners would have noted that one. That's an easy one to remember. Now, I have to say that I was most intrigued by the list of things that people are saying about you, and they're all very complimentary. And Louise Hay, who's the best-selling author of You Can Heal Your Life, said you were the kindest man she's ever met. And I must say, your whole composure and the way you speak indicates that very much so. I mean, it isn't as though it's a surprise, I'm sure. You've been around a long time and people have recognised exactly how sort of godlike you are, I suppose, in your own way.
Well, the truth is that I see everybody as my brother and sister in God. And I can't help being kind to them. To be unkind to anybody would be to be unkind to myself. Really, it's all selfish in the end.
Interesting, yes. Now, we are in very volatile times. What would you suggest people could do at the moment to bring some sort of peace to the Middle East?
You know, what I've read is that, at least in Egypt, they're doing it in a nonviolent way. This is very impressive. But really, I just don't know what to say. It seems like we are living, as you put it, in very volatile times. And I think that we're going to see the world sort of topsy-turvy for some years to come.
Right. Now, do you give any support to the idea that in 2012 we're going through a very key point of upliftment?
Is
2012 a period of upliftment?
I think that it will be that. It may be coming in through the back door, however.
Right. So at least you believe there could be some special point of upliftment which will help us to take a step up out of these, I suppose you could rightly call them, the Dark Ages.
Well, actually, we've got the Dark Ages behind us, but this is relatively dark to what we're going to see in the next few centuries, because what we have now is a sort of battle or struggle going on between the Dark Ages that are still around us and the Age of Enlightenment that is coming. And there's a stress between the two. And in the end, because the age is pushing us upward, the Dark Age will have to be completely thrown out the window. But it is what we're seeing right now. 2012, I think, will help very much to push us in the direction of greater tranquility and world brotherhood.
Yes. Do you think that all these events are a reflection of ourselves?
They are what?
Are they a reflection of
ourselves? Mm. Well, I'm not that way. You're not that way. We have the mass consciousness of mankind, and that consciousness is not very high. They don't seem to want to help each other. It's a reflection of that. But there's also this upward reflection. You know, I've been teaching for quite a number of years. Back in the 1940s, 50s, I should say, people were much less spiritually inclined. Now I find many people coming. In those days, if you saw somebody under 40, it was unusual. Now it's normal for people who are young people to come to these teachings with great interest and great zeal. So, yes, things are changing, but you have to say that we've got a fork in the road. Some people are going to the left, others are going to the right.
Yes, indeed. Right. Now, again, at this time when so much is going on, if people want to join groups, what type of groups would you recommend them to join? I mean, which would help them to find their spiritual self?
Well, I am not a proselytizer. I always tell people, the only one I want to convert you to is your own higher self. But each person has to approach that self according to his own nature. So he should look in his heart and see what he really wants. And then think, what can I do that will fulfill this need? And then I would encourage him to go in that direction. If he wants to help people, then does he want to help them on a physical level? Become a doctor. Does he want to help them on a mental level? Become, well, I don't want to be a psychiatrist necessarily, but somebody who tries to offer good advice and encouragement. Do they want spiritual help? Then, or to give spiritual help, then let them tune in more to God and try to share God's bliss and love with people. But the path to it, it really depends on you. I was myself very disillusioned with my Episcopalian church, which was the Church of England when I lived in Europe, and it was not what I wanted. But I see that it seems to be what my brother wants, and that's fine by me. Just whatever way suits you, because we're all different.
Right. So is our higher self our God self?
Yes.
Right. That's a simple answer. And complete as well. Now, here's a point that some people might ask. Where is our higher self?
Well, where is yourself? Yeah. Your ego self is in the medulla oblongata. And that's why you look down your nose at people if you're proud. Because the tension at the back of your neck pulls your head back. If you're talking of your spiritual self, that center is in the heart. And there are more nerves in the heart than just about in the brain, or at least as many. So the heart is much more than just a blood pumping organ. But it's more than the heart. It's that center in the spine, opposite the heart, which in yoga is called the Anahat Chakra.
Right, fine. I'm sure many people have queried where the higher self is and wondered exactly where it's supposed to reside. Now, Swami, it's been fantastic to talk with you, and you're very alive and aware. And your achievements are remarkable. But we all have to do our own bit, and you've done a little bit more by the sound of it. It's been wonderful to speak to you. I feel very privileged indeed. So have you got a final message for our listeners, and then I'll announce next week's guest?
A final message
is to love everybody is to love God. To love God is to love everybody. Seek his bliss in everyone. When somebody scowls, think that he's only scowling because he's trying to get rid of an obstacle to that bliss that he wants. Realize that everybody, no matter how dark a person, the worst mafioso, really, he thinks he wants power, he thinks he wants money, he thinks he wants revenge. What he really wants is happiness, and he's just not defined it properly yet. It takes many lifetimes to learn where our highest interests lie. But always look at people with the thought that those higher interests are there for them. If they will only just reach up a little notch higher and try to become that.
Right. Thank you very much, Swami, on behalf of myself and all our listeners. Thank you very much. And I'll quickly announce, friends, that next week I have Cal Corey, who's a psychic, who's coming onto the program. So thank you for being with me today, and I hope you can make it next week. God bless you all.